Hey, it's Jeff here. After working as an automotive tech for almost 25 years, I can honestly say that finding employment with the right shop has been the difference maker between loving what I do every day or hating my career choice. Let me tell you, I've been there, but I've also had jobs where work didn't really feel like work. I love the challenge of fixing cars, so loving what I do, that's the easy part. Finding a good place to do it in, now that's been the struggle. And that's where my friends at ProMotive knock it out of the park. They're a recruitment company specializing in jobs for our automotive industry. A-techs, B-techs, master techs, service advisors, managers, you name it. They are constantly looking for applicants in automotive to link them with available job postings at only the best vested shops around the country. ProMotive has a team of professional recruiters that can help you with your resume, prep you for the interview process, and negotiate the best pay and benefits package for you. And best of all, it's free to anyone looking to gain employment. Check them out at gopromotive.com/Jeff. gopromotive.com/Jeff. Just think, you could be just 5 minutes away from finding your dream job.
You know, in order for us to get better, we're going to have to get more proficient at things and being able to do things in the independent world anyway. I mean, we're not at dealerships. You know, in order for us to charge more and to do better for our customers and stuff, we've got to do it ourselves. We can't rely on sending it somewhere else. And, you know, as long as we're trying, that's all that we can do.
Yeah, so that's part of being professional, is being there when you say you're going to be there, right? Now, we know we were talking, it's not in a perfect world. Sometimes you're supposed to be there for 3, you get there at 10 after, half an hour, whatever. But for the most part, you guys are pretty good about being professional and saying, you know, this is my window that I'm going to be there. You don't have, like, it's expected, I guess, that when you guys are going to go out on a call, that the car that you need to program, flash, diag, whatever, is there, right?
Right. Very rarely is it not there.
Yeah.
You know, there's instances where you've got like a used car lot. There's some major used car lots down here that use some of these automotive shops to install transmissions or do work for them and stuff like that. And what will happen then is they will say, you know, our vehicle is over at Al's Auto Repair. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm working for a car lot, but I'm at another automotive shop, and that's fine. I mean, so long as we're at an automotive shop, we're good, you know, but the vehicle's there, it's stable. You know, and we have to have that. I mean, that's part of protecting our customer's vehicle. Because when you're programming, there's a lot of things that go on. And you know, sometimes things don't go well and the vehicle ends up inoperable and it can be fixed, but you know, part of having the vehicle there, and not doing a waiter, programming is, you know, it's going to be okay. We're not going to inconvenience people as much as if they were sitting in the waiting room waiting for the module to be programmed, you know. And I notice it a lot that a lot of shops, because this is new for Oklahoma City, but a lot of shops are trying to get the transmission in and get it done at 3 and then get me in there at 4. And then I've seen it. I have had to hand the keys to the customer when I'm done with what I'm doing. And it's not right.
No.
Because I'm like, you guys sure you don't want to go drive this and make sure that everything's good? Like, you know, and I see it a lot. Like I get done and they back it out and the customer's been sitting in the waiting room. They don't tell me, you know, I'm like, man, I'm glad that didn't brick, because that happens every once in a while. And,
you know, we're
right now we're having problems with servers and getting the wrong files. You know, Ford's doing it, you know, Nissan. Sometimes you look it up and it gives you a file and it's incorrect for the vehicle. I mean, we've run into it. So,
how does it's kind of like putting you guys in the last link of the quality control chain. And yet that's not how it should be. You know, there's so many other things after the thing is programmed and it needs to be driven. And yeah, you're going to drive it, but you like, do you get in some of these cars, say for instance, we're on the transmission subject, and you drive it and the brakes are shot or you know, the it's got squeaks or rattles in the suspension or something. You're like, was that there before? I don't know. Right? Like, do I let the customer know about this, or do I think that the shop that's actually, you know, in charge of the transmission is going to be, you know, so many variables, right? Like, that's not a good look for the shop right. that's getting this done, right?
Right. And we cannot control what the shop does. That's not our place, you know?
Yeah.
And so let's see how I can put this here. I normally don't test drive.
Right. Okay.
Because I never know if the fluid's full on the transmission. I never know if they have other work they need to do to the vehicle. Like I just program the module. We get a screenshot of everything that we've done. We prove that it's been programmed, and then we just, you know, let them know, hey, the vehicle's ready for you to, you know, right. finish up. But, that you just asked me a question about that. Have I gotten into unsafe vehicles? Yeah, you bet your ass. I've been in some where the feels like the tires are about to pop. It's kind of scary, you know. Sometimes they've been working on it and they haven't driven it yet, you know, and they want me to go drive it. And, you know, luckily I haven't been the one who, got to pump the brakes, while I was backing the vehicle out of the shop right after a brake job, you know, that would be scary.
Yeah. We saw that happen at my shop just, about a month ago, the same thing. Somebody, you know, 10 to five the night before does a brake inspection / safety inspection on a car, you know, pushes all the calipers back to be sure that, you know, they'll go back, reassembles all the brakes and everything, puts the wheels back on the car, torques the wheels. He goes home. He comes in at 8 a.m. The apprentice comes in at 7 a.m. with me. And, you know, first task is, you know, that vehicle is done. The customer's going to pick it up here. And, you know, 9 o'clock this morning, we need it out of the bay because we're going to use the bay. And this is, again, like you and I have talked a lot, right, about processes and procedures and stuff. So the young apprentice, he has no idea what he gets in the vehicle. And, you know, he turns it on. He makes sure the hoist legs are clear. And the shop door's open. He goes to put it in reverse, starts the back end of the parking lot, touches the brakes, car doesn't slow down. Right? Now he immediately, he's like panicking. What do I do? Right? And luckily he panicked enough that he just kept pumping the brakes, and eventually he got a little bit of pedal and he got it to stop. But it scared the bejesus out of him because, I mean, it's not, we don't have a particularly wide parking lot, and we're lucky that there was nobody coming behind him at the same time, right? So it's just little things like that that we now implement the procedure that if you put the wheels back on, before you torque anything, you get in, pump the brake pedal, you know? Like, that's just what you do. I mean, I did that for years on my own accord just because, again, working in a dealership with like 18 guys, you do watch stuff happen. And that's how you kind of learn some of the lessons yourself. You don't have to learn everything the hard way, people. You can learn by watching other people do, you know, funny stuff. You can take that as your lesson. It's okay. You don't get, you know, nobody's got a copyright on dumb stuff. You can learn from other people's mistakes. So that's how we implemented that process. And it, you know, so far, knock on wood, has been good. But yeah, there's some scary stuff.
Well, you know, I work for L1. I don't work for all these shops. They all have their own rules, their own procedures. You know, I've started working at a big auto auction out here for all the dealerships and stuff. And it's different there too. Everything is different at that place, you know, than a normal automotive shop and the way they do things and the red tape you have to go through and the things that they want you to do, you know, and I'll respect that to a point. But when it starts getting into how we do our business, we're not a one size fits all, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's certain lines that we won't cross. And, you know, part of that is that when we make an appointment, you know, yes, it may be from 8 to 5 on a certain day. But you know, I know if I'm not going to be there, by about 11 or 12, I know, like I can tell, you know, and barring traffic, which in Oklahoma City, you know, I've been here my whole life. I can tell you in the last 5 years, until about 10 in the morning, you're just gridlocked a lot of times on the highways. And then you better be getting somewhere around 3:30, because that's when the wrecks start happening. And then once the wrecks start happening with the new Google Maps and Waze and all these different programs and stuff, they start sending everybody down these hidden, avenues that I used to use to get around, traffic jams and stuff. Now everybody knows about them. So, you're pretty much just gridlocked everywhere you go. We're just growing. So there's a lot of factors that go into that too. And, once we press program on a vehicle, it's not like I can go, I have to be at this other shop by 1 o'clock. So I'm just going to yank the DLC out and I'll see you guys tomorrow. Like, that's not going to happen. And I'm not leaving my equipment at your shop, and coming back for it. I have to have it. So that's why we just tell people, the vehicle needs to be here and be stable. It needs to have a charged battery. You need to have both keys when we program. Like, we have all of these things set in place. And we try really hard to stick with these certain things, and where we run into problems is when we have shops that do not have their procedures in order. They're the ones that drop the ball and they try and roll it back on us and say, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. And, I work for somebody who is very, like I say, is by the book. I don't want to say that. I don't want to call him bullheaded, but, it's his way or the highway, it's different working for somebody that will back you up. I had to fire a customer this week and I was nervous about it. I did not end the conversation with the customer. I felt like they were trying to make an example out of me in front of one of their customers. As I'm stepping aside, I've stepped my way to the end of the desk by this point, and I'm waving their customer up there who had just walked in the door. They were not ending the conversation. So I just got in my van and drove off.
Yeah. Not very professional, is it? When they're sitting there trying to browbeat you, I think, as if to try and make an example of you in front of a customer in line, essentially, to speak to the shop owner. Cause you messaged me about it and I'm listening to that going, like, who does that kind of stuff? Like, it's, I mean, I know who does it. People in this industry do it every day, but I mean, we keep talking all the time about changing the industry and being better. And yet here we are, with this kind of pig-headed attitude of, I'm going to dress down this, mobile guy in my shop in front of my customer, cause I really don't care. He's going to see that it's my business and he's, screwing me over. That's when I heard you talk, it seemed like that was the message that they were trying to get across, was like, watch me be the big man and be in charge. And that stuff for me always makes me laugh. Cause I mean, especially cause from a standpoint of like, well, we're a shop that has to call in somebody to do something for us because we can't do it ourselves, but watch me play the heavy role. Like, get over yourself. Those of us in the know that really know, like, we're not impressed by that. We're not intimidated by it. Like, you're trying to appear to your customer that's standing behind me as something that you're truly not. But anyway, I digress.
Right. And our intent is not to, schedule our way. Our intent is to get to everybody the same day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's our intent, but there's only so much that we can control. Our main focus is doing the job correctly, not wrecking someone's module, right. not leaving them empty handed sitting there. Our intentions are well, our intentions are to do the best that we can in our time slot, and provide you with a properly programmed or properly diagnosed, or properly cut key, that type of thing. Some people just don't accept that. And so, I I feel like that if I continue to do business with a place like this, and there's multiple, this isn't the only one. This is probably the third time I've had to do this. I feel like if I continue to do business with them, they're going to try and get us to mold our business around their way of doing things. Yep. And that would put off every other customer that I have, because this shop is the minority. Everybody else, we don't have issues with. Everybody else is happy. You know, we're fixing cars every day. And so, you know, it's different working for somebody who will just back you up. You know, I was very small amount of me was nervous about driving off. But at the same time, I have to think about what I would have said had I stayed, you know. And so it was just for years, you know, I would work on anything. I would do anything. You know, shops would say, hey, we need to, you know, the customer can't afford this. We need to put this Value Craft alternator on. You know, we need to. They want to supply their own part, or, you know, their warranty, extended warranty company wants us to install this used salvage yard part. You know, I got to the point where I felt like I should be the one, making the decision, since I was the professional who was working on the vehicle. And I got to the point where I would say no. And, you know, I've worked at only two shops, so I don't have a whole ton of experience. You know, a lot of techs have worked at a lot of shops, but, you know, I feel like I feel like I've hit the lottery on three different shops, really. I mean, the two, what I consider the two best shops in Oklahoma City, as far as policy and procedure and doing what's right for the customer. I've worked there, and then now I work for L1. So I haven't worked at any of these shops where they're putting their percentage numbers over what's right for the customer.
And that's a tough thing, right? Because I mean, you've heard us now for a couple months, we've been having kind of those conversations about, you know, there should be a pretty substantial markup on parts, right? That should be a big factor in your profits is your margin. We don't want to be, you know, 5% above or giving the customer the parts at, you know, our costs, and not because it's there's a reason that the margin has to be there, right? Profit's not a dirty word, as Chris says. You know, we put the margin there so that we can operate, so that we can grow, so we can, you know, take care of our customers if the part fails. You know, that's why all that stuff is there. But like you and I were just talking, you know, sometimes I see some shop owners that are looking at it and they're running their margin. Say it's $100, 100% markup. So it takes, well, you know, a $70 part and it puts it at 140. And then they look at they've got their diag charge in there. They've got their little bit of labor maybe to do the part, for example, an alternator or something like that. And all of a sudden now it's like an $800 bill. And they go, a customer's not going to pay that. Maybe they know about the customer situation or something like that, you know, blah, blah, blah. All the kind of stuff that I try not to get involved in because I'm not cut that way. I'm not empathetic. I really am not. When from a customer standpoint, it's just very good and easy for me to always separate it. It's just business. But we see then is that the first thing that always they do is they go to a next line down of part, right? And you and I were talking and that, like, you know, that's not good. And we were talking about how we talked about an ignition coil situation that I saw happen where, you know, we made the assumption that the customer probably wouldn't afford the OE one. We probably wouldn't get the job if we bought the OE, you know, Toyota ignition coil. So we went to probably making too many judgments on the age of the car, what the customer's intended use of the car is, how much longer they intend to drive it, yada, yada, yada. Make all these assumptions. Go and get the cheapest coil we can, put it in. It lasts 4 days. Comes back. Go through the diag process again. Warranty that part in. Get another one. It lasts 4 days. Finally, now we're having to eat the difference of the coil to get a better quality part to put in. Great. We looked after the customer. We took care, air quotes, of the customer. But what do you think that customer's confidence is in us at that point? Pretty poor, eh?
Yeah.
You know, That for me is not advocating for the customer. That's, if it's advocating for the customer, it's advocating for the customer at my expense. I look, either the customer can either look like I can think I'm really foolish and don't know what I'm doing, incompetent, or they can look and think that I'm really trying to rip them off by installing some pretty crappy parts. Because that's the other thing, right? The whole parts thing I hate, because it doesn't matter when you talk to somebody that's selling you the part. Nobody's ever really forthcoming and says, oh, yeah, this is a great part. That's all they ever say. It's a great part. Well, it's a great part. Define great. What's the best part? Yeah. Is that brand the best? No? Then how great is it? You know? Like, I see all the time we put on stuff that, like, we know. I had a fuel pump driver module in a Ford. That one cranked me up. It cranked me up pretty bad. I was reaching out to some friends and I was frustrated. And I was, you know, you've gotten my phone call rants that I light up your messenger with like a 3-minute, you know, profanity laced, you know, epic rundown of because, you know, we knew what was wrong. The code is telling you, hey, fuel pump driver module goes offline. And you look at it and it's like, first of all, it's not even bolted back in the spot that it's supposed to be on. We're talking on a Ford Explorer Sport Track, right? And then second of all, it's, well, why is it, well, okay, it needs a fuel pump driver module. Oh, look, it's got those, that one symbol that we love to see in this industry, like the infamous black wings, right? On the electrical components, like, okay, well, that just confirmed my diag even better, right? I don't have to second guess my diag at all. We've all been there. We all know that that's a part that you might put on to sell the truck. It's not a part you'd put on to get the truck, you know, for the customer that, it, for all intents and purposes, is maybe going to drive that truck 3 more years. Is that the part to put on? No, it's not. So why do we do it?
There's, you know, and there's more than that. There's more than just parts. It's more than just programming. You know, if you don't find out your customer's intent with their vehicle, you could really be doing them a disservice because... Yeah. You know, if you are into the whole scare tactic on selling people things and they don't intend on keeping this vehicle for more than 2 or 3 years and you don't ask them, now you've gone in and said, oh, man, you need struts and ball joints and brakes and tires. You need all this stuff. This vehicle is going to, you know, this is dangerous, you know, whether it is or not. You know, you might be doing them a disservice because you didn't ask them their intent, you know, because if you ask them, say, you write up, because we believe in the 300% rule, right? You know, that's what everybody's preaching. I've got pictures of it. I see it at shops now in Oklahoma. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing to see. And I've been taking, every time I see it, I take a picture of it. I see it on the board. I go in, and then you know what I do? I go and I talk to the technicians. I say, do you guys like that? And they go, hell yeah. That's the greatest thing that's ever happened because one, we don't sell things without knowing that there's going to be a catastrophic failure, you know, or that we could have caught something, you know, so now we're inspecting the vehicle instead of just churning through vehicles every day. Mm-hmm. So we're prepared for that. You know, our comebacks are less because we can go back on our ticket and go, hey, now. Because in a week or two, you may forget that you even worked on the car. So now you can go back to your records and go, no. We knew about this. We talked to you about this, you know. And then, yes, you sell more work. So, you know, they're making more money. And so it's a win-win for everybody, really, if you follow it the correct way. But, you know, without knowing an intent, you need to look at a ticket and go, and you know, you just said it, you know, you're looking at it going, oh man, you're emotional about it. I don't know if I would spend, you know, $6,000 on a 2015 Sport Track. You know, this thing's where you're at is a rotten ball of rust, you know. That's not for you to decide, you know. And so without finding out intent, you know, if you go and talk to the customer and go, you know, what's your intent with this vehicle? And they go, I'm trading this thing off. You know, I just need it to last 6 months. Okay. Here's where a lot of shops fall victim to that. Okay. because I've seen it before. They say, I'm getting rid of this car. I'm getting rid of this car. I'm getting rid of this car. And so you go, all right, then we're not going to put on these high dollar parts. We're going to put on these cheap parts. And guess what? Guess what? Things change in their life. And 2 years down the road, now they got a failed fuel pump again. Mm-hmm. And guess who looks like the bad guy, you know?
Yeah,
and you thought you were doing what was right, you know?
Yeah.
And so to me and to the shop that I worked at and to Keith and Liz and everybody that I've built my whole entire career around, to me is, we're going to do it right. We're going to put on the best thing that we know that we can buy. We're going to do the process the right way. We're going to program with the correct files. We're going to do everything we can the best way we can. And if you're not willing to do that, then we don't want to do the repair.
Mm-hmm.
Because things change. So I don't want to hear you say, I'm going to trade this off and I'm getting rid of it. And I go, okay, well then we don't need to put on the top line part. We don't need to do the entire procedure. You know, we can bend brackets out of the way and pull parts off, and we're not going to chase these threads before we put the bolts in. Hell, why are we doing that? Don't waste your time. He's getting rid of the car, right? And that's then great. His life changes. Or they sell the car and the car shows back up. Somebody bought it and said, hey, we knew that they were taking this vehicle here. They recommended you, and you go through and go, crap, we put that water pump on last year, but you know, I thought they were going to sell this, you know?
Yeah. So, and great point, because what do you do at that point? Because I mean, some shops, right, would not even maybe fess up to them being the ones that put the water pump on, right? That new customer's got that new car, they're back because they used to go to, you know, your shop. And then they liked that car when they bought it used. And they went through the glove box and found a business card in there, you know, some from work invoices from there. They're like, well, they know the car. I'm taking the car back there. And then all of a sudden, just like you said, that water pump that you put on that was a $60 water pump instead of the $140 water pump is now 9 months old and it's leaking. They don't know that it was replaced, right? So you could give them an estimate for a water pump and they would just be like, okay, cool. I'm paying for a water pump. This is what old cars do. The reality is that like the right thing to do is to take care of that customer, warranty the part out. But now you're in a situation where you're putting another subpar part on, right? Another 1 year water pump, because maybe this customer is intending to keep that car 3 years and it should get the 3 year water pump. But because you only have a warranty for a 1 year water pump, 1 year being quality, right? Everybody understand what I'm speaking of. Is now we've got that customer into a cycle of, oh, I had this car and hey, I could not get a water pump to last more than a year. I don't know what was going on. Reality is because we kept putting on crap parts that started from the beginning and we never saw it through because we didn't bite the bullet and do the right thing and go, okay, I'm going to get some warranty paid out for this. I'm going to have to bite the bullet, spend the other $100 out of my profits now and put on the water pump that should have been put on the first time. Why do we not do that in this industry? Why is it so, when we say it out loud, it makes so much sense. But yeah, we make that decision every day. I've seen it at least 100 times in my career if I've seen it once. Now, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's more than 10, less than 100. Customer says, I'm going to trade the car. I'm getting rid of the car. Then guess who's driving the car? Customer's son, customer's daughter. Because maybe, right, they didn't get what they wanted on trade-in. Maybe the son or daughter, you know, it's a good first car for them. But just like you said, now it's got something that, you know, we're having to do a tie rod again. Like we should just stop. You know, we all complain in this industry about subpar parts. But the reality is that we drive the market for the subpar parts. We would have it fixed in no time if we stopped buying them. But we don't, because every time we call up, half of the parts we buy every day, we know are substandard. We know it. It's terrible.
We have another layer here that we didn't have, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's called Carfax. Yeah. So you have to be careful. You can say, oh, they're just going to sell the car. Guess what? Everything is logged on Carfax. I mean, if you're using, basically, if you're using one of these shop management systems, unless you tell them not to, they are sharing with Carfax, you know, yeah. It can be a good thing. It can work in your favor. People can go through that and go, man, this car's got 300,000 miles on it, but I'm looking through the Carfax and it's had all these services done at this certain shop, you know? And so that's where I'm taking it. I'm taking it back there. They didn't even have, maybe they bought it from a car lot, you know, but they can go to the Carfax and go, you know, I'm taking it back there. This place has been really good for this vehicle. So, you know, but I would think that if they went through that and saw water pump, and then 6 months later, water pump, and then 9 months later, water pump, and then 5 months later, coolant flush, water pump, it's like, okay, maybe we shouldn't take it back to that place. You know, maybe they're doing something wrong. It's probably in their mind what they're going to think is that shop's just screwing it up. And it may not be. They may have just put on a cheap part because they were trying to save their customer money. They felt bad for them, or they were, you know, well, this customer's going to get rid of this car. You know, this thing's, it's got 300,000 miles on it, whatever. So, you know, you're going to lose some sales, you know, and you're going to lose some on your, I mean, you're going to have to lose some on your parts percentage, you know, but what is the real cost? That's what I look at, you know, you should be acting as a consumer. You should be acting like that and saying, what is the real cost? You know, there's a real cost in everything. You know, you eat cheap. Guess what? You eat cheap, and I'm right here. I eat cheap. Too. Okay. Guess what? In the end, it's going to cost.
At some
point, you know,
for sure.
You go and you buy a cheap car. I mean, I've had good luck with some, but there's some brands out there that you're like, you just know walking into it. You're like, this piece of crap's not going to last 100,000 miles. It's going to need a motor. Fill in the blank. Everybody knows who I'm talking about. So
I have a friend that messaged me about that one this week, and she's like, what about a Kia? And I'm like, nope. And then she's like, what about a Nissan Rogue? Nope. Like, you know, and it's like, you feel bad because this is somebody that, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're trying to look at something 2019 because their financial situation is saying, financial institute is saying, if it's newer than 2020, you need a cosigner. Hmm. And that sucks, right? Because you and I know, now even rust isn't the factor you're looking at. A lot of these cars, when they're 5-6 years old, what's left for them usable life? Not always a lot. You know, it used to be, we could say up here, it's like, okay, well, you're going to get one that's going to have a little bit of rust on the fenders and stuff, but you know, it's 8 years old, but those transmissions are great. You know, those engines are bulletproof. Now, like, the market is flooded with Toyota, you know, I almost said Toyotas, Hyundais and Kias, that it's like the four cylinder's got a recall on the engine. The six cylinders, I just had one. I reached out to a friend of mine, Brandon Dills, about, we had one that was like, when you would drive it down the road, and then if you slowly let off the throttle real quick, all of a sudden the heat in the dash would drop from like 100 degrees Fahrenheit to like 60 in the time that it took you to do a slight U-turn. And I'm like, there has to be air getting in this cooling system. There's no other way. And I, you know, like, we're like, what the hell? Like, it doesn't overheat. It doesn't run bad. You know, none of that kind of stuff that would point you to say there's a head gasket problem. So we do a block test on it. When you know it, when it's hot, there's a head gasket opening up. Well, like, there's something that poor lady just bought that 6 months ago. And now she's getting rid of it again because, like, she wants heat. And who can blame her? Like, you know, of course she wants heat. She lives in Canada. It's wintertime. I don't want to be driving in stop and go traffic and having to think that I've got to accelerate the heck out of this thing, you know, to get some heat again, because when I sit at every stoplight, I'm freezing. So there's a whole car line right there that you can't even recommend to somebody because their engines are such trash. And then it's like the Nissan thing, like I say at the same time, if you can't buy one that's a stick shift, don't buy one, because to me, now they're supposedly better. And you're going to get somebody that's just like going to go on there and go, hey, Nissans are not all that bad. How many Nissans do you guys go out and program for CVTs?
All of them.
All of them, right?
Every one of them.
Because they all need a transmission.
All every of one of them has.
Yep. So,
you know, that's an absolute. You know, they say don't live life with absolutes, but I can guarantee you that's one absolute. It's either had a transmission or it's going to need a transmission. And if it's had a transmission, it's going to need a transmission again. That's just right. An absolute. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, it comes down to even just more than that too. I mean, you know, there's shops out there that'll put head gaskets on. I get it. I've done it, you know? And then there's those that they say, you know, we don't know how hot this thing got. We don't know what condition it was in before you overheated it. And so you're getting a long block, you know? I mean, the shop I worked at, we were down to not even doing cam and lifters on Hemis.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're taking too much of a risk. I don't want to charge you all this money. And then, we don't know where the metal went. You know, we had a couple of them that come back blown up. Yeah. So, you know, and then you look at it and go, crap, I'm going to lose this job. That was a $4,000 ticket I could have had, you know? And I think a lot of shops will go, well, I need that. So we're just going to sell it,
yeah.
You know, and I get it. It's tough. And no, I'm not a business owner. I've never been a business owner or anything like that, but I see the successes from doing what's right more than I see the successes of, you know, from doing what's right for your bottom dollar. I see way more successful shops that will say no. And we're one of them, you know. There's lines that we will not cross, you know. You can take it like this. We get called out to program a key, we're supplying the key.
Right.
And I could go out and they say, I've already got this, you know, transponder key that I bought off of online or whatever. And you know, that key may cost us $25 and we charge $120 for it, right? Okay. Yep. And so let's say they've already bought the key. We could save ourselves $25, make $25 more in profit. But it may not start their car in a week because we didn't supply it. We don't know where it came from. And then the other but is, the first point is we were trying to protect our client from possibly having issues with the key. The second, though, is protecting our machine because you put in a cheap key in there and it will break your cutter blade. And those are like $50, $60.
Yeah. See, I didn't know about that. What, on the key thing, not to kind of skirt, you know, change channels, but do a lateral move. The whole thing with Nastiff this week, that you saw some people, you know, share some memes about and, you know, so on and so forth. Is that like, I can't think that you guys are stressed about that at all. Right. Like it'll have no effect on you guys.
No, yeah. It will not have an effect on us. Every one of us that works at L1 has a VSP. I mean, Keith sits on the board. Why would he not though? I mean, why would he not? We're a legit business, you know, we all have them. That's a man, there's going to be a lot of podcast episodes on that. That's a major thing right now.
Yeah. But do you feel for the guys that are going to be locked out? Because I mean, we know of a couple guys that have not been able to get a VSP and are smart technicians, really good, you know, smart guys, but they maybe have some stuff in their background. You know, that everybody gets young and stupid sometimes, right? And they're not getting clearance. Like, how do you feel for them? Do you think it's overreach at that point that's keeping them out?
You know,
I know it's a good question, isn't it?
When you live by rules,
yeah.
Some people, and it's the same thing with this shop I had to fire. You know, we live by rules. And, you know, how are they going to handle each one? I don't know. I've heard that you can petition, you know, they're going to have to figure that out if they're going to require people, to get them. But right now, you know, that's not a requirement. They say it's voluntary. I know Autel's on board though. Autel wants to get off of the feds' radar, you know, But those, there's other avenues, you know, that's not going to stop them from repairing vehicles. You know, they can get with a mobile guy that has a VSP. I mean, there's a lot of shops out there that are not going to have a VSP. They're going to use us, or they're going to use somebody else, you know? I mean, it's not an end all. It's really not. Mm-hmm. And how much immobilizer are most shops doing right now? You know, not a whole lot.
Now, here's something to mull over. Is this suddenly an opportunity for technicians, as an independent technician, to go out and pursue getting that yourself, to make yourself more lucrative in the hiring side of things?
So you have to carry so much insurance. So I don't know how that works if you're not at an actual shop. So going and getting it with one shop and then going to another shop, you're pretty much going to have to re-register everything again, I assume. I mean, I haven't had to do that. Keith took care of mine, you know. But I assume you would have to prove insurance and all that and re-register wherever you're working at. So, to be honest with you, I don't know too many shops that even know about it. Mm-hmm. So you could go in there and go, I have a VSP, and they're going to go, great. And they're probably going to treat it. It's going to be kind of split 50-50, kind of like with the ASEs. You know, you go in there and say, I have all these ASEs, and they're going to go, good job, buddy. Don't give a crap, you know. So because we don't do a mobilizer here. So why does that help me, you know? So I don't see it keeping somebody from getting a job, and I don't see it helping anybody get a job, really. It's just something that was done to try and make a difference, you know? I mean, that's their intent, is to it might be a whole let's just do it and see how it works type thing. We don't know. I mean, criminals are criminals.
It's a huge problem up here right now. Like Toronto, for instance, I went 2 weeks ago, and the news was full of like the hot spots in Toronto of where cars are getting stolen. I mean, to the tune of, I think they're getting like 100 car thefts a day, which is a lot, you know? And it's, what's scary is it's like, we always think of a car theft, oh, it must be an older car. Like, I'm sure half of them are probably Hyundai, and this is not a pick on Hyundai thing, but we all know, like, the Hyundai boys or something, the Kia boys or whatever, that showed how everybody, you can steal them with like a USB cable, right? I'm not talking just about that. These are higher end cars that I think guys are going around with some of these black market tooling, and they're cloning a key and stealing the car, right? They're not.
Yeah, that's the risk you take. So let's say you're at a shop and there's a guy that comes around and says, I make keys, right? He's not a legit business. He's just a guy that can make keys. Okay. And so you're like, well, I don't have a mobile guy, or maybe the mobile guy's too expensive, you know, whatever. Or the locksmith doesn't show up, because around here, the locksmiths don't show up.
Right.
They want certain work. There's certain work that they don't want. So let's say you hire some guy, and you've got a good example here, 2008 Corvette. It has a rectangular flat key. Okay. It doesn't use a blade. It's a push button start. So let's say you call him out and he makes you a handy dandy key for $85, and you're like, all right, hooray. He beat the locksmith. He beat the mobile guy. He beat the dealership. All right, good. Guess what? He just made two and you didn't know it.
Yeah.
And he looked in the glove box and looked at where that person lives. And the next day he went and took their car. You know, that's where if the tool required a VSP, there would be a record of that happening, you know, that's where it would help, to at least try and they could get, you know, they could at least stop some of it. You know, you're never going to stop all of it, but you could stop some of it. And that would be my fear, you know, using somebody. And so where having a VSP may help is, giving confidence to certain places and say, listen, you know, I have a VSP, all this is recorded, we're a legit business, we're insured, we don't want to lose our license, we don't want to go to jail, so we're going to do what's right, I think the dog's got a squeak toy.
I hadn't heard it yet.
Okay. All right. As long as you can't hear, I can hear it in my headphones, but as long as you can't hear it. Anyway, so, you know, we're a legit business. We're going to protect you. You're not going to have the police here knocking on your door in a couple months saying, hey, you know, a key was programmed here at this place. The customer's vehicle got stolen. Tell me about that, you know? So
yeah.
That's their intent. You know, that whole thing though, I'm a joker. You know, I like to kid. I like to make memes. I like to poke fun at things. I'm never serious. You know, I'm kind of neutral on the whole thing. You know, I don't give a crap whether they do it or not. You know, if I have to do it, it's another layer that I still have to go through with putting all this information in, getting driver's licenses, getting insurance or verification of the vehicle. You know, that's another layer that I have to, another hoop. You know, that even I've got some shops that are like, we're not doing that. We're just calling a locksmith. Okay, you can call a locksmith, you know. And I've had shops that say, you know, you guys are just real sticklers on that, aren't you? Well, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to lose that.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, they don't realize that, okay, I lose my VSP because you didn't want to call your customer and get the information that is required for me to get a PIN code for their vehicle. So every time I come out here, it's going to be $500 or $600 because I got to pull the instrument cluster out. I got to pull the ignition switch out. I got to pull the body control module out. I got to put them on a bench. I got to risk bricking them with some Chinese aftermarket tool in order to learn your keys. You know, I mean, like I said, if we have to do it that way, because it's a certain brand or make or model or certain, you know, age of vehicle where you just can't get the correct PIN code or things have been changed around, you know, yeah, well, we have other ways of doing it, but we try the legit way first, you know, as much as we can. You know, like I said, it's just another way of protecting, you know, our clients. And so there's been shops that are just like, I'm not doing all that, you know, okay, that's fine. You know, sorry.
Yeah. You might just be then the shop that's not going to get into a whole lot more electrical or drivability, right? Or any kind of diag, because you're going to become more and more locked out. I mean, I shared Mario's video and a discussion popped up on the Jaded Mechanic Facebook group. And somebody's like, chimes in. Well, do you not know how frustrating this is to me? I'm just a person that wants to be able to buy my own key and program my own key for my own vehicle. And I'm like, because I had said, I don't think it's all this is all that a terrible thing if it means that some shops are not going to be, because I think that a lot of shops that maybe, and this is where I sometimes probably alienate some people, as I probably say, because a lot of the shops that probably are trying to navigate, look for the workarounds and stuff like that, a lot of time they're probably not. They're probably doing some sketchy parts scan and stuff anyway. So again, like me, it doesn't really bother me too much if the more people that don't want to invest in training, tooling, time are locked out. I don't see that as this huge negative in the industry, but he was like adamant that you don't understand. This is complete overreach. And like, I'm thinking, is there that many people out there that really still wish that like they could go out and just buy a $10 key at the hardware store and the guy goes behind the glass and cuts it and you go out and you walk out to your 84 Chevy half ton, you put it in and you turn it and you drive away. Like, yeah, those were the good old days. But for God's sakes, man, that's over 20 years ago. Like, who is still thinking that they can buy a key without having to get involved with some kind of programming? It's just been the reality now for the last 10 years that you have to do this. So when he's like, I just want to be able to buy the tool myself, I'm sorry, but unfortunately some shady people have ruined it, you know, and this is the reality. This is, you know.
Well, it's the same for, I mean, anything else like that. I mean, if I could get on Amazon right now and buy a $250 tool and a $25 key and go over my neighbor's house and cut a key for their house and change the locks on it and claim it as mine, that would be a problem.
Right.
You know, yeah. I'm not saying you can't do it, but there's a reason why the locksmiths don't embellish anything. They hold everything to the chest, and not because they don't want you taking their jobs. It's because it's crucial information, you know. I don't know why we resist change so much. You know, I feel like a lot of the problems that we have with our industry is just the lack of willing to change and, you know, adapt, you know, and like, you know, hey, this is 2024. And you know, AutoAuth has been around for what, 6-7 years at least. Mm-hmm. And there are still shops that they feel like they are locked out of Chrysler and that they can't do it. And I'm like, you have a $8,000 Snap-on scan tool. Do you have an up-to-date subscription? And they say, yeah. And I'm like, why don't you just pay the $50 and use AutoAuth? I mean, you're not locked out of Chrysler at all. You know,
my very own Zeus, mine, I have AutoAuth on it myself, paid out of pocket out of myself. So it kind of, I just chuckle when people go, you know, there was that whole thing on TikTok months ago where somebody was mad because they had to take it to the dealership to get the codes cleared after they repaired it. Obviously, and you know, they're like, I got the scan tool. I'm not set up for AutoAuth. What's your excuse for not being set up for AutoAuth? Like, what's your thinking? You know, it's not a crippling cost to anybody out there running a legit business to think that they can't afford or to make excuses on why they can't justify the expense of to serve their customer. You want to serve your customer, get what you need to get, pay for it, charge them. That's how it works, right? It's nobody's holding a gun to your head saying you can't charge more than $100, you know, for a key programming. Nobody's holding a gun to your head. That's just, you know, if you think that it is, you're crazy. It's, you can say, well, the market dictates. So be the market. Set the market. You know, do better. I never understood that method of thinking that I have to be cheap. I never understood it.
Yeah. Well, but that's the old school mentality. You know, I talked to a shop owner. I mean, he's up there in age, you know, and he's not really running the shop anymore. He does machine work. They do machine work there. Super clean shop.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of, I not out in the middle of nowhere, but kind of probably a good 20 miles from the main city here. There's probably more cows than people. And he was telling me, he said, you know, things have changed. He said, you know, he said, because mechanics, he said, when I got into it, you know, we were just coming off of the mechanics being, you know, the poorest of the poor, you know, they didn't make a whole lot of money. Cars didn't cost a whole lot of money. So you couldn't charge a whole lot of money to fix them. And everybody knew how to work on them. I mean, you'd have a mom cook dinner and then go out and set points on her car. You know, and so people had you do it because, not because they couldn't, but you know, because you had to do it a lot. I mean, we had filling stations are a thing of the past, but you used to get gas and top the fluids off every time. And while you're there, hey, can you check this out? You know, and so, I mean, we're talking about a time where if you wanted to drive your car to Colorado, you would have to stop halfway up the mountain and readjust the carburetor. So, you know, things have changed from back then to where now, you know, we're not the poorest of the poor. We're doing better. Cars are just getting ridiculously expensive. And back then, people didn't rely on their vehicle as much as we do now. They didn't drive as much. It wasn't as big of a thing. You know, you could pick up a car for $300 to $500 back then. That was not a, you know, an abnormal thing to find one cheap. People didn't care as much. They would drive them with squeaks and rattles and wind whistling in and the AC quit. Oh, well, let's forget that, you know? I mean, my grandfather talked about, he had a cousin who, basically when he would lose a wheel cylinder, he would take the line off and shove a penny nail in the line and screw it back on. And he would forget. And so he brought the car over one day wrecked. And my grandfather said, well, what'd you do? You ended up wrecking your car? And he said, yeah. He said, apparently I was running on the right front brake only. And when that wheel cylinder blew out, I put a penny nail in it and lost my brakes completely. So, you know, and he wasn't a mechanic, right? So we're past those days now to where, you know, people are going to have to rely on us a little bit more. Costs are going up for everything. And I can't afford it. You know, that's why I drive older cars. I drive an 05 Escape. You know, what's the most expensive part on that? Another Escape, right? Like, yeah. You just go buy another one for $3,500.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're getting into, one of my friends on my chat group said that he called, he made a call on a bad steering wheel on a vehicle. Mm. I don't remember if it was a Volkswagen or it was probably something European. He said the cost of that steering wheel was $3,000.
Oh.
$3,000. I just, you know, and I'm like, she's, you know, like,
yeah.
What features do you lose? You know, I mean, is it going to be to the point where something like that has a sensor in it? And I think his did, to where you have to fix it. So, you know, I do have empathy for people having to repair these cars. But, you know, people ask me why all the time, you know, why do you drive such an old car? Don't you make decent money? And I'm like, it's because if it breaks, even though I can fix it, I could not afford a $3,000 steering wheel, you know.
No. I can't even afford it. And I wouldn't justify it in my mind. Right. If I drove something that as soon as the steering wheel controls, of whether it be for airbag, cruise control, volume of the radio, whatever, as soon as that stopped working and rendered the car undrivable, I'm getting rid of the car. And I'm trying to then find something older that doesn't have such stupid technology in it, because call me nuts, call me crazy, the steering wheel is still just about pointing the wheels where the car is supposed to go. That's really what it is in a nutshell. It shouldn't be, it should be illegal to make that car unusable unless you buy a $3,000 wheel just because of some other electronics that go inside of it. And I understand, oh, there's, oh, the airbag is there. Yeah, I know. But I'm also old enough to remember when people used to pull the airbag fuse out because they didn't want it to go off in the accident because they believed that it caused more damage to you than if you didn't have it on. Right. So there's lots of cars that I have worked on in my, but like, you know, you got an airbag light on it. Yeah, I know. I got the fuse pulled out. And you didn't have the conversation with the guy about how that's really misinformed and not too smart. And, you know, I don't ever want my kids to ride with you because the guy probably just recently started wearing his seatbelt because he got enough tickets that he finally learned. You know what I mean? Like, but the idea that the part all of a sudden renders the car, that part, a steering wheel, it's the same as, like, it scares me to death when we see how these cars are going with radios and what essentially is just an entertainment system that, like, I can't even turn my heat on now because it's all going through my screen of my radio. And when that screws up, I can't turn my heat on. Mm-hmm. Take off with that nonsense. That's crazy. I should still be able to so choose that if I want to drive a car without a working radio, I should still have heat. Right? But people are like, nope. I mean, I drove a 2019 Ram Laramie. Like, great big screen in it. Everything is done through the screen. That's cool. I know those radios are worth like $8,000 when they screw up and it's out of warranty. Like, there's going to be all these cars parked at trade-in lots and dealership lots and auction lots because they've got these high-dollar entertainment systems in them that are useless, don't work, and half the functions that are into the car don't work. That to me is not progress. But
right. Well, and then yeah, what are we going to do when all of this stuff starts failing? That's, you know, that is that's on the horizon. I mean, I'm seeing it right now, and I'm like, man, if this one module fails on this car, you can't drive it, you can't start it. There's no workaround for it. It's the hub for the networks on the vehicle, right? So if they quit making that part, that's the only part they have to quit making. One part on the car and it's done. There's no workaround.
Is that not scary? That's scary.
Well, and that's what I was talking to this old shop owner about, is he said, well, you know, we were talking about, okay, let's say your old small block Chevy had points. Let's say the points quit working. They quit making any points, right? We just switch it to HEI, right? Okay, well, they quit making HEI. You can't get HEI anymore. Okay, well, somebody else has come out with a regular, you know, another style of distributor with a dual pickup coil in it, you know, for digital, you know, timing and stuff. You can, I mean, we're talking about a motor that came out in 1955, mm-hmm. and they're still creating parts because it was so simple, right?
Yes.
Is there going to be somebody who creates a universal, you know, network communication hub for a vehicle? Let's say you said 2019 Dodge Ram. Let's say that the body control module is the hub for the network on it, right? It's the gateway. So that goes bad, and Chrysler's out of business. They're gone. Okay. Cause they've already been warned anyway, you know, we might just get rid of you completely. So
yeah,
so you drive that truck and then that fails. Okay. You can use a used one, but for how long, you know?
Yeah.
And, or, you know, we've ran into problems with that too, where you can't use used parts on certain cars, you know, there's workarounds for it, but not every one of them. So yeah, I mean, we're going to have to get really good at, you know, seeing the big picture on a vehicle. And, you know, we're going to have to say, hey, we're going to have to forget the money that we could have made or that we're going to make. And we're going to have to say, hey, I don't think you should fix this car unless we're going to fix it this certain way and use a certain part. And I'm going to need the vehicle for a week. I know you're going to be put out, but I can't rush my technician on this. This can't be a rush process because there may not be too many more of these parts left that are good. And, you know, there's just this one road that we're going to take. We're not taking any of the other roads. You know, this is a nice 2-lane brand new paved road with nice marked lines on it. And I'm not taking the ditch. I'm not taking the gravel road. I'm not going to take the long route. This is the way we're going with it. And if you don't like it, then I'm sorry. We can't help you, you know?
Yeah. I just wish there was more. I just wish the customers always made more, a smarter, more informed decision. You know what I mean? Nothing frustrates me more than when I see somebody call me up and they go, hey, I just bought this used, what do you think? And then I have to be that person that's like, oh, well, you know, here's what I can tell you about a Nissan Rogue. Like, that engine is, I've seen more than one of them come in with no oil in it. You pour oil back in it and the thing is quiet again. Like, it was like the Honda of the 90s. It was fantastic. But my God, that transmission, man, you might better buy one now and then buy a spare because, like, they're terrible. And I'm sorry that you have no recall, you know, no recourse, you have no extended warranty. I don't know if that's the original transmission that's in it. I'd be very surprised if it is. If it is, call Guinness because you've got a good one. You know, the world record books might want to hear you call them. But it's more than likely, it's probably got a used one in it that's been, you know, reprogrammed, which I don't know what, and the fluid's what color? Oh yeah. Okay. Sorry. I wish you'd have called me last week. Like, I hate having those conversations with people, right? It just tears me up because I used to be able to say, go buy a Honda or go buy a Toyota, right? And you could buy a car that, like, this girl that we were speaking of that was called me about this Kia, she drives like a, I don't know, a 2002 Toyota, you know, Camry. Right. And it's a high mileage 2002 Toyota Camry. Like, there's some rust and, you know, it's reliable, but yeah. It's just, it's at its end of life, right? Like, it's just too much. They're not there's got no air conditioning left. Like, there's no point putting money into this thing. But what do you tell these people to buy? Because it used to be you could say, okay, go get another Toyota. And that was great. There's none left, right? All those good cars, they've all been crushed. They're all gone, right? You try to say, go get a Honda. Well, they're all, you know, that kind of car is gone too. And so what do you, you tell them to go get a CR-V? Like, the CR-V from, you know, 2010 on is not like the CR-V from 2010 and down. In terms of reliability and, you know, they're a different car. Even Honda went away from that. Toyota too. It's sad to see because I don't know what to recommend to people anymore. It really sucks. And I hate it because they buy something and they call me and I got to be the bearer of bad news. And, you know, and they think it's like, what a jerk. I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's just our way of thinking is always like we see the worst in every vehicle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I hate that. That's the part that just kills me. Because it seems like I'm never giving good news. I'm just giving bad news.
Well, yeah, to a point, yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, not everybody can drive a Jeep. You know what I mean? Like, it's to me, I love that. But to other people, it's like, what a turd. But it suits me, right? So trying to put my headspace on in terms of what is the perfect car for somebody else, I don't really know. And that's what stresses me out when they ask, because they might drive mine and absolutely hate it and hate everything about it. And, you know, but then what do you tell people? I don't know what to do anymore. I keep saying, you know, buy a caravan. Because, like, if you need room and you got some kids, right? But people go, you're crazy. Yeah, well, but there's a lot of them out there. There's still really good parts. The engine has issues, sure, but show me a V6 made by anybody that's overhead cam that doesn't have issues. I'll wait. Thank you. Nobody does. You know, you're still better to buy that than to tell somebody to go buy a Ford Escape with a turbo or one that gets coolant intrusion and you're putting an engine in it. Like, somebody, a friend of mine, she just went through that. You know, she's got one that's like, oh, I had it 3 months now and it's misfiring. Yeah, I told you that would happen. Like, you know, welcome to Ford. And this is not me ripping on any one particular brand. They're all trash, but it goes back to what do we tell people? You know, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was just the electronics that were screwing up constantly, but the engines are garbage. The electronics are garbage. The suspensions are garbage. The brakes need like a scan tool just to be able to service them. Like, it's just, it's gotten ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has. I mean, it is a changing world, and it is hard to not look at it as bleak. You know, a lot of guys are looking at it and going, I don't know how much longer I can do this, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I see it, but, you know, I mean, for everybody's sake, you know, if we consider ourselves the best and that we're doing things right for people, you know, we have a job to do, and it's going to take a lot. And I feel for a lot of the, guys that are, you know, low flat rate hour, having to churn out hours. They don't have the opportunity to spend any energy on training and learning and staying on the up and up. They have to get the quick, fast answer, you know. But, you know, we provide them avenues, you know, and I, you know, speaking of YouTube people like Mario, you know, do I have a problem with them giving away answers, you know, sometimes? Yeah. I mean, my boss does it. I mean, how do you think I feel about, being a programmer, when my boss actually, sells the answers on his training channel for $25 a month, you know? I have to look at it like this and say, you know, in order for us to get better, we're going to have to get more proficient at things and being able to do things in the independent world anyway. I mean, we're not at dealerships. And so, you know, in order for us to charge more and to do better for our customers and stuff, we've got to do it ourselves. We can't rely on sending it somewhere else. And So, I mean, there's a lot of avenues that guys have to take. I don't fault them for that. I mean, we use them too. I figured out a car today using Google. You know, I found a TSB through Google that I could not find on, you know, our two or three service information platforms that we use. So, you know, as long as we're trying, that's all that we can do. We can't control what the manufacturers are going to do. We really can't control what the government is going to tell us to do as far as a mobilizer goes, as far as emissions go. I mean, I can't go out and delete trucks anymore. You know, it's all unfortunate, yes, but we have the freedom to drive a vehicle in both of our countries, you know, even though your country has less freedoms than ours, I'm sorry.
It's true. It's true.
If you'd like me to read the news to you, I will. Sorry.
It's pretty bad, eh, when you get interviewed by Ratchet and Wrench magazine and you can't even share a link because Ratchet and Wrench magazine is seen as a news publication in Canada. And I can't even share the link to the article on my Facebook profile because it won't come up to any of my Canadian friends. My American friends can see it. But my Canadian friends have to go online to ratchetandwrenchmagazine.com and find the article and read it. Do you know how? Anyway, it is what it is. I mean, we need it. Both countries need an election like tomorrow. I'll say that. You know?
Yeah.
But that's a frustrating thing for me, and you know, is it stopping what I'm trying to do? No, not at all. I won't let it. You know, but it is, you know, going back to the idea of what is government overreach, right? Is this key thing and this NASTIF, and we do it to ourselves as consumers of goods. We do it to ourselves because we are never satisfied with the thing that we have. We always want the new shiny, faster, cooler, louder, you know, more gadgets and, you know, whiz bangs and everything else. We do it to ourselves. So we have to either learn to appreciate what we have that we already have and have already paid for and keep it reliable, or we have to just embrace the fact and accept the fact, embrace maybe isn't the right word, that it is going to become more costly. And we're going to have to shift some of our priorities in life if we want to continue to be part of the motoring public to that's going to cost more. You know, I mean, if we're already selling, you know, $100,000 for a Ford truck, you know, or any truck, like if you'd have told me 10 years ago, you're going to see pickup trucks sold for $100,000 within 10 years, I'd have told you were nuts. Because I can remember when the most expensive Ram didn't go 50, you know, and now it's 100 and people are paying it, you know? So the idea that we can't get paid in this industry for something, we can't get paid more than $100 to program a key is ridiculous. If they're making the payment on $100,000 truck, they can certainly find $800 to program two keys for it. Right. It's not, don't tell me that it can't. All keys lost shouldn't be something that people immediately have to have sympathy for that person. It's going to sound really braggadocious, but I have never lost a key for a vehicle I own yet in my life. No, because it's just one of those things. I was just trained that like they're on you all the time. You know where they are constantly. Now I understand sometimes people, marital things happen and you know, cool. I get it. But I mean, you know, how many times have you got a call from somebody that's like, well, we used to have two and then we lost one and now my whatever has lost the other key and the car's sitting there completely useless because we have no keys. I'm sorry, but there's bigger issues at hand in that household than getting keys programmed. Like what have you put into society, people?
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't keep any more of your time. I appreciate you as always coming on here. We had, absolutely. I appreciate you listening to me rant this week. I am glad that you shared some memes with me, as always. I'm glad that you ranted at me because it got a good conversation happening. You know, it's a situation of this is just something that we're going to get through together, all of us. You know, it's the technology's out there to be able to meet, I think, any obstacle that we encounter. Just continue to, people that are listening, continue to network, you know, continue to do your training. Like, you know, there's so many people out there. You and I were talking before we started recording tonight about TikTok. There's so many sharp people on all the social media platforms. It's absolutely incredible. The stuff that I've just seen on TikTok today alone, the problems guys are solving and the way they're documenting and showing to people, it's unreal. It's unreal. So, you know, as I honestly believe, as long as we have access to information, it's going to be the key thing. And then we share with each other, network with each other. I don't think this NASTIF thing is a big obstacle at all. I really don't. And, you know, I hurt for people that genuinely are being, you know, are having a hard time what it's going to mean to their business. But I believe, you know, keep doing what you have to do, you know, keep doing what it's going to take, you know. It's not, unfortunately, there's going to be casualties. There always is. It's just, that's called progress, I guess. You know, and I wish everybody the best. So what, any closing thoughts, Jeff?
I don't think so. I mean, no.
Yeah.
I think we got it all out there.
And, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get offended by what I say about NASTIF.
No. And listen, people that listen to me every week, I appreciate the fact that even if you sometimes do get offended by what I have to say or think, that you still keep tuning in. Because, I mean, as much as it might sound, I'm really not trying to offend anybody. It is just, it's the way I talk. It's the way I am. It always has been. I appreciate the people that know me and love me. They just get it. Chuck Engine Chuck is like, he's rude as shit. And it's like, I'm not, but it's just, it's blunt like a spoon. And it really is. And I appreciate everybody's support. The people that know me, like Jeff here, he knows exactly what I mean. He knows just like, you know, he knows exactly where I'm coming from. He knows the kind of person that we are, what we try to do for each other in this industry. And, you know, there's no better people, I think, in this industry right now than the people that I'm currently aligned with. And, you know, I'm blessed to have them in my life. I'm blessed to have the employer that I have. It's all good. It's heading in a good place. I really believe this industry is headed in a good place now. The pay is incredible. The working conditions are getting better every day. Don't dwell on this NASTIF thing as if it's like going to lock people out. Don't see it as like that. Just kind of like you hear me say, do a lateral move. You know, adapt and overcome. We can all do it. So anyway, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jeff, for being with us tonight. And glad to have you on again. You will be on again. It's going to be that way here. And I just want to thank everybody for all the support and the love. We've got some great changes coming, some great updates in the near future. It's going to be awesome. So, and thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Ciao. Hey, if you could do me a favor real quick and like, comment on, and share this episode, I'd really appreciate it. And please, most importantly, set the podcast to automatically download every Tuesday morning. As always, I'd like to thank our amazing guests for their perspectives and expertise, and I hope that you'll please join us again next week on this journey of change. Thank you to my partners in the ASA Group and to the Changing the Industry podcast. Remember what I always say, in this industry, you get what you pay for. Here's hoping everyone finds their missing 10 millimeter, and we'll see you all again next time.